looks like it may not be there. Are we back there again? And judging from the newspapers, the media at any rate, not much has changed other than Tata's in the hospital again, and the president. And of course, the country wishes him well. But yes, we cannot forget he is 94. And he's had a tough life, and while we wish him well, we certainly would hope that he also is accorded the element of privacy he deserves at this stage in his life as well. It's a very propitious day for me to be back here in Harness, what with the debate of the vote of Parliament, I think, comes before the House today. And I'm sure we'll all be there. It's also, though, very unfortunate, I'm informed here, that the DDG, Mr. Chimfupa, recently lost his mother. And really, you know, condolences go out to him and his family. And we will send an official letter from the Portfolio Committee to him. But I'm sure you will all do him justice here, his leadership. The best that you can do is to ensure that you do serve him well in his absence and in his department. Thank you. From our own committee, we have apologies from Honourable Jordan Hill Lewis, who's attending a close family funeral. Mr. Honourable McIntosh, party business, I'm not sure if that's the half. If it is, he should say. The Honourable Mabasa, who of course attending the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development. The Honourable Albert Elberts, who's attending the Portfolio Committee on Labour. And the Honourable Rinani Ambrosini, who is on medical leave. And we continue to wish him well on his recovery. Other than that, we have a full team for the SEZ from ETI. In his place today, I'm just looking, we would have then the chief director. Is that right? Mr. Nguka would be here. Is that right? Okay. Well, let's get the agenda adopted to start with. Please, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Pogasa, seconded by the Honourable Dr. James. And then we move straight on into the deliberations on the special economic zones. When we last left this, we were awaiting a further clarification then from DTI. I hope I am correct on that position. And I was hoping that with the week away, that would have afforded you sufficient time to really examine this and study it and come to us, back to us, with a constructive response. So, as I said, we've got the Chief Director, Mr. Nkaka, who's Chief Director Infrastructure Investment Support, Mr. Sombina, Director Legal Services, IDAD, Ms. Donathan, Director SEZ Stakeholder Management, Mr. Jay Satorley, Deputy Director, is that right? SEZ, is this Monitoring and Evaluation? I'm just writing up. And Advocate Jan Strader, the Legal Advisor. Of course, we also have Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, our own Legal Advisor. See how it is always with the legal circles. And then, Ms. Naidu from yourselves, parliamentary liaison. And our own full staff, Tina Lambert. Okay. I know a very helpful lady at the bottom is always around. Kluta, Ms. Kluta, is that right? Yes. And Ms. Madalani, Ms. Akwanda, Mr. Herman, and Ms. Erling. Right, let's move on in then, and we'll turn over straight away to yourself, Chief Director.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member. I'll just run through the presentation in response to various issues that were requested by the portfolio committee for us to respond and clarify on. Those issues were on the appointment of the standing alternatives to advisory board approach when applicant is a strong further clarity on roles and responsibilities, further clarity on one-stop shop and transitional arrangements. On the SEZ board, the DGI agrees that we will be termed a special commission advisory board to be referred to as an advisory board because the members raised a concern that it sometimes it's confused with the SEZ board. So we are proposing an amendment to use advisory board instead. And the DGI agreed that the bill be amended to enable minister to appoint alternative members for members listed in clauses 7, clauses 7.2A to H. That means we are talking about public representatives to the board, that is the advisory board. And to stipulate that the alternate members are standing alternate members. In other words, if the permanent member is not there, then we know who's the standing member, who's alternate member who's supposed to be there. That is our proposal. So that we achieve continuity when it comes to the issues of the board. If the applicant is a province, a proposal was made that the minister should treat an application for designation by province differently to other applicants because trade is a shaky board, but concurrent national and provincial competences. The DGI is of the view that SEZs are best regulated at national level, and there is no basis to treat provinces differently from other applicants, such as municipalities. The bill, however, does not seek to regulate or affect the legislation competences of a province to regulate trade. But in cases, for instance, where there's a conflict between the provincial and national priorities in terms of trade, then Section 146 of the Constitution applies. For instance, as I say, that Section 146 of the Constitution applies in the event of any conflict between national and provincial legislation in the context of trade that we are talking about. Mm-hmm. Yes. The incentive from provinces and municipalities, the proposal was made that the bill must make provision to enable provinces and municipalities to provide their own incentives to SEZs. We are of the view as the DGI that while the bill does not provide for support measures from provincial and municipal spheres, the bill does not preclude provincial or municipal sphere from developing incentives for SEZs. So in other words, provinces can develop their own suite of incentives to add to the ones that are provided by the national government. And in that way, they would be making their own areas to be more attractive and competitive. The same with municipalities as well. In terms of the roles and relationships, that is the line of roles and relationships where you have an applicant. It could be a municipality or its agency, a province or its agency, a national department or its agency, or a PPP. And that applicant applies to the Minister of Trade and Industry for designation of an SEZ, and then they are issued with a license, hence they are called in the bill a licensee. And in terms of the bill, they must establish an entity which should be registered as a business enterprise. And that entity, actually, when they establish it, they must also establish a special economic zones board, that is a board of directors, that will oversee the work of developing that particular SEZ. And that special economic zone board will actually see to it that an operator is appointed to get involved in the development of the ecosystem. So as I've highlighted, in terms of the designation, the applicant, whether it's a government, a department or an entity or a PPP applies to the minister, the applicant must meet the related criteria. And the minister, on recommendation of the advisory board, and after consultation, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, designates area as an assist, issues a license to the applicant. And then the licensee, that is the holder of the license now, establishes an assist entity and appoints SZ board of directors, what we call SZ board in the bill. And that entity must establish a national or provincial business enterprise in terms of the PFMA. And the SZ board will govern and manage the SZ entity and appoint SZ operator. And on recommendation of the operator, it will be the role of the SZ board to approve the businesses or investors that are located in that SZ. The SZ operator, on the other hand, is appointed by the SZ board through a competitive and transparent process to develop and operate and manage an SZ on behalf of the SZ board. So in other words, that operator is given a clear mandate in terms of the targets, in terms of the strategic forecast and all that, and then it's expected to fulfill that mandate and report to the SZ board. And the operator must obtain, to be able to operate, they must obtain an SZ operator permit issued by the minister. And the operator, one of his roles is to recommend to the SZ board the approval of businesses or investors that must locate in the SZ. In terms of the SZ businesses or investors that are allocated there, the businesses make a choice. In other words, they make a choice on whether to locate in an SZ A or SZ B or SZ C. And after making that decision, then they go to the SZ board of that particular SZ in terms of approval for location. Because the reason is that there are, for instance, tax incentives that will be involved. So there should be a registration of beneficiaries to those tax incentives, hence that approval process. And the SZ board acts on recommendation of the operator. The operator will do its due diligence about that investor and see if they qualify in terms of the criteria that has been set by the minister, and then recommend that this particular investor qualifies, and then they are approved. And then the business must conduct prescribed business or render prescribed service to the SZ. In other words, if the business is approved to let's say for meta beneficiation, they are approved to do that. You cannot see them tomorrow doing something that is completely opposite to what they were approved for, because even the criteria for qualifying for that tax incentive will be in line with the nature of business. And they are expected to comply with the prescribed criteria as reflected in the regulation. Then coming to the one-stop shop, the bill creates a framework to establish a one-stop shop and obliges operator to facilitate one-stop shop function for business seeking to locate in SZ. The details of a one-stop shop model cannot be prescribed in the legislation. It is also the experience of many countries that have implemented one-stop shop for years. It's quite a dynamic environment where you find that you come up with a model, and then along the way you see a need to improve on that model or shift to another model to adopt to your needs as a country. As a result, the one-stop shop model is quite dynamic. It changes over time. And hence we are proposing that it's better not to come up with an exact model and prescribe it in the legislation, But of course, it's better to create a framework for the establishment of that one-stop shop in legislation. So flexibility in this regard is required to enable the GTI to evaluate one-stop shop mechanisms being applied and adapt what as the consequences and access to resources change. The bill will provide that implementation protocol will be concluded various organs of state to facilitate one-stop shop processes. The minister, in terms of the bill, we are proposing that the minister should report to the portfolio committee annually on the progress of the one-stop shop. There are various models that we have studied, and some of them we have actually seen how they have functioned in other areas. There's what is called a one-door shop, where all approval bodies are located at the SSS site. In other words, where you can have SARS, you can have municipalities, we can have environmental affairs officials, everyone located in that particular site. That is what you call, those people actually have a mandate to approve those applications. And you have online approval system where an applicant will do everything online, filling the forms online, and then the approvals, they receive it at a specified time. Required authorizations in this regard are completed, submitted, and approved online. So it's much quicker and cost-effective as well. And then the one window shop, which is a commercial body that is appointed to liaise between SVET investors and government departments to streamline approval processes. That is where, for instance, investors launch their applications to this an entity for approvals, and this entity liaises with all government departments and agencies, and then the point of contact for that investor is that a commercial body or that entity. And then you have integrated registration function, which is a single form. In other words, here you there's one form that you launch, which actually consists of many what's called various functions or various areas for application, and you launch that application for approval. And then we have SSS and government department account managers. In other words, here you have a situation, for instance, if we talk about a visa at Home Affairs, you have account manager at Home Affairs, you have SSS account manager at SARS, and so on. Those account managers will be there, they will be authorized to deal with SSS matters, and there will be set times in terms of the turnaround times to approve those applications. So those account managers will be expected to have on that task of streamlining those processes and approvals within a specified time. So in terms of our proposal as the GTI, in the short term, because I understand there are certain things that we can achieve in the short term and those that we can achieve in the long run. In the short term, we are proposing a government department account manager. This is based on our initial consultation, for instance, where we find that some departments are quite amenable and they feel much easier in terms of having account managers within their own environments where they can look specifically at SSS matters and approve them as quick as possible. And of course, when we talk about these account managers, our proposal is that the one-stop shop service, because we start with a few SSS, we are proposing that it should be at SSS level, that is each SSS having the point of contact to say this is a one-stop shop office for you where you have one or two people that are fully employed to deal with applications by investors. And those applications will be distributed to those account managers in various departments and agencies for approval. And actually, before that happens, we are going to have agreed turnaround times in terms of what is doable, in terms of SARS. For instance, we've had discussions with SARS looking at that turnaround times. Some you find that is 10 days, some is 5 days, but we are looking at the means of streamlining those processes to do them concurrently. So in other words, if it used to take 15 days because one process used to be 10 days and another 5 days, we are looking at streamlining that process and doing it concurrently so that in the end the turnaround time is 10 days or even less. So these are kinds of discussions that we are engaged with various entities right now. And then when we talk about medium to long term, we talk about online electronic facility. In other words, where an investor, even if they are overseas, they don't have to fly into South Africa, they can still lodge those applications online and get approvals. So that is a long-term view about these approval processes. I've already alluded to the fact that we foresee a one-stop shop on each SEZ administered by at least two dedicated one-stop-shop officers. And this SEZ one-stop-shop office will house all the relevant application documentation. So in other words, we want to minimize on traveling time and traveling costs for investors. They must know that, okay, if I'm here, I will do everything all at once and within no time. And that lowers the cost of doing business. And one-stop-shop officers responsible for receiving applications and forwarding to account managers at various authorities will do so, and the account managers will be responsible for receiving and processing those applications and give feedback to the one-stop-shop officers. So we had an opportunity, Honorable Chair, for example, last year to visit a one-stop-shop service in Batam. There's an island in Indonesia called Batam. They have established that island as a free zone for the whole of it. So there's a dedicated one-stop shop, and they said a month they are getting on average 15 investors to register for all those kinds of applications. But they have prescribed turnaround times, for instance, ranging from 2 days for a visa to 10 days and 40 days for building permits and all that. And investors know, they go to that office, they lodge all the applications, and then the approvals are done, communicated with the head offices and all that. So that is the kind of a service that we have decided to have. But of course, there will be building blocks towards that to achieve that. And we talk about the SEZ account manager should be a senior manager, people have authority to approve applications. And then the one-stop shop officers should be the ones who follow up various applications. Should not be investors, but they should follow up. And we would like to see a culture whereby investors are kept informed. We've seen something wonderful, for instance, with Home Affairs. When you apply for an ID, you get an SMS to say how far is your application. Those are kinds of things where we use electronic or our systems like SMS and emails to keep our investors updated about the processes. So this is a proposed process, as I've alluded to, but now it's more in a diagrammatic format. When investor communicates with the one-stop shop official, and then taking from there up until the final approval. And those things, we've learned one thing, Honorable Chair, that this one-stop shop, for it to work, you need people to skilled people in terms of, for instance, customer care, in terms of understanding the needs of investors. And we also need people with a good attitude in terms of dealing with investor needs and being able to handle them quite well. So, coming to the transitional arrangement, the bill provides that designation in terms of IDZ regulations to be regarded as a designation in terms of SZ bill. In other words, the existing IDZ will automatically get the what call, will automatically transform into the new advent environment. And the bill will be amended to provide that operator permit issued in terms of ITZ regulations will be regarded as an operator permit in terms of the SEZ bill. And the bill will be amended to provide that ITZ enterprise located in ITZ in terms of the ITZ regulation will be regarded as a business approved to locate in an SEZ. In other words, we won't remove businesses or investors that are already in the ITZ. But of course, in terms those businesses, in terms of qualifying for new tax incentives, there will be a set criteria, and we'll look at whether they qualify for all those incentives that are provided. The bill will be amended to provide that existing ITZs must comply with SEZ framework created in the bill within 3 years of commencement, which period may be extended by minister. In other words, here, while they will automatically become SEZs and the operator, their operator permit will make them to comply as such, but we appreciate that currently there's no distinction between an operator and a licensee. In other words, under the current legislation, the operator is also a licensee. But in terms of the SEZ bill, there should be a distinction between the two. So we are giving them 3 years to sort out those matters in terms of so that there's clarity of roles and lines of accountability as the SEZ bill seeks to achieve. So with those few words, Honourable Chair, this brings to the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chief Director. Thank you. Just before members come in, can we ask Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, I think you also distributed, or we did distribute, the charts you had drawn up. Is that correct? Has everyone got the chart? All right. So let's hand over to yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. In fact, men should have two documents before them. The one will be a timeline. At the bottom there is 120 to 180 days. The next block says this process may run concurrently and 90 days. It looks something like this. That's the one document.
That's what is called the EDZ 2013-12B.
Excellent. Okay, if we can start with that one. In fact, I started and then DDI went and, shall we say, perfected it for the members. So once I read saying in here, I think it's already the process sort of that I've tried to explain to members so far. On that document, the first, it almost seems like there's a column created for pre-designation processes by the applicant. Now, there is no time given there, because that is not something that falls within DTI's mandate or power to consider. Things like negotiating to control the land, that is something that the municipality or the province will unfortunately have to do by themselves. I suppose you can say that there could be facilitation by DTI, but that is not something that DTI has control in respect of the time. Also, the aspects of your feasibility study. There are things, you know, that can play a role. It could be 3 months and it could be 3 years, depending on the role players involved in respect of your negotiation to buy the land, in respect of your feasibility study. I remember with Kuha, I think there was a special butterfly that they had to provide for. So, you know, things like that. I think the Saldana is a frog or something like that. So, you know, those kind of things play a role, but it's not something that DTI has control over. So that is why there's no time given there. But where DTI does have control, that is where time is indicated to the committee. Now, the application and up to your designation. So from the moment that your applicant submits its application, after we, the minister can publish. DDI estimates between 120 and 180 days. Now, that time difference is simply because there might be a request from advisory board for further information. So you give a little bit of time for your applicant to come back to you. So what you will have is your applicant will submit the application, the advisory board will consider, the minister will receive a recommendation, there will be a consultation with the Minister of Finance, then there will be public consultation, consideration thereof, and designation. So that is your application and designation period. Of course, it is for the committee to decide whether that time is reasonable, but I think the committee needs to maybe just keep in mind that that time is probably if all things go well. There's always your things that can go wrong, but I think, you know, at this point in time, it is not worth for the committee to try and figure out or try and debate and use time to consider things that might go wrong. We in the bill, we need to think about how to streamline the process, and from what I've seen, it looks like it is as streamlined as it can get. And then if everything goes according to that schedule, you're looking at maximum 180 days. Now, a process that can run parallel at the same time with the application is the establishment of an entity to manage the special economic zone, because that runs not with DTI, but with your treasuries, your municipal councils, or with CIPC if it's a company. So that registration and establishment process can actually run together with the application for designation. The same with trying to find an operator and do your interviews or whatever the licensee will do when identifying operator with the necessary skill, etc., etc. All of those things can run concurrently with the designation process. I suppose, and the DDI can maybe give more detail, but I think it will be quite clear almost from the start when the application comes in whether there is a green view of it or a red view of the IDZ. In the sense of will it go ahead, won't it go ahead. I think by the time the application comes in, your ducks need to be in a row, and you will know that, or you will know that it is actually not in a row. Then the next aspect is whether DTI again has control is your operator permit. And that whole process, the DTI is of your opinion should last about 90 days. So, and again, you know, once the operator has been identified, that application can come into DTI, so that to some extent there's also some concurrency there. Then if I can go to the next document, which sets out the different parties and their roles. It has a two blue blocks at the top, saying national government, provincial government, municipality, public entity, municipal entity, or a public-private partnership. They become the licensee. Now, from that document, you can see that a licensee's responsibilities is threefold. It is the three blue blocks in the middle. Establishing your ECZ, transferring control or ownership of your geographical area designated, and appointing the Special Economic Zone Board. From there, it goes to your ECZ entity. Now, that ECZ entity is controlled by the ECZ Board. Or to some extent, you can say the SEZ board will represent the interests of the entity. So there will be a very close relationship. They will be managing, developing, etc., etc., and appointing an operator to fulfill the practical implementation of their duties. So the operator, the pink bit, will do all of the duties on behalf of the board, because there will be the actual implementation of that. So what we have, and DTI are going to propose some amendments to make this look like this. What we have at the moment is that with a new amendment proposal that the licensee, the word licensee be replaced in most of the instances with board, the ECZ board, you already start having this picture. The only thing that was still outstanding was that the geographical area remained with the licensee. And the question was, how does the board and operator then work with this if it's the property of the licensee? And DTI is proposing that there be transfer of control. that it's specifically provided that the licensee can't just establish an entity that the national government must come and make it work. The licensee must provide the necessary resources, must transfer control of the land so that your entity is in fact enabled to do the necessary development and management and so on. So those are the roles. I think from where we started just with the public hearings is a lot more clear. It is very clearly defined at this point in time. It has a logical flow. And I think it's something that members can look at now and start interrogating and seeing whether the relationships can work, because it's quite clear where the relationships are flowing to and from. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Right, over to members now. You will recall this, we asked for these clarifications at the end of, I think it was just before, on the 4th, as it were. Right, I'm turning to members now. Honourable James, Honourable Fabasa, Honourable van der Merwe.
Thank you very much, Chair. I must just congratulate the people who did presentations. It was very, very elegantly and thoughtful. So thank you very much for that. I had two questions. One had to do with the one-stop shop. And I just wanted to ask you for some more background here. I mean, what is international best practice? Did you look at a particular model for this? And so what you ground this in? And I also wanted to just understand what the accountability levels are. What if at the one-stop shop the deadlines are not met? What happens? What are the sanctions? What is the accountability mechanism? You were clearly like to emphasize having individual staff, the one-stop shop, the right attitude. That is, it's an attitude to assist rather than an attitude to block. And having staff there is excellent. But the mindset has to change a little bit. So that was my one question. The second question is for Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe. Could you tell me where did you get the timeline from in terms of duration? 120 to 180 days. That's between 4 to 6 months. Where does that come from? And what is that based? What happens if the deadline is not met? Do people get automatic approvals? I mean, what are the sanctions for not doing this properly? But principally, there must be global best practice around this as well, and so where do you get those figures from?
Thank you, Chairperson. My clarity is only on slide 13 on page 7, particularly on the commercial board. I just want to clearly understand that this being a commercial board suggests that applicants will have to pay for the services that are provided by the commercial board. Is that correct? Secondly, on the same issue, I do want clarity on who appoints this commercial board. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable
Ben
Merwe.
Thank you, and apologies for being late. I also want to congratulate the presenters, and I apologize for missing the first three quarters of this, but this diagram, I think, makes it much clearer, and with the amendments that have been made by DTI, it looks like it's taking better shape. My question is also on the one-stop shop, which I have anxiety about. I don't know why DTI have chosen E and B, because it would seem to me that D might be the easiest way. My anxiety comes where you specify two people under the SEC Government Department account manager option. I think. Am I right? Yeah. Two people that would be on site, and then they would. Send the applications to the relevant person. But what if today you have 100 applicants and tomorrow you have none? Why two? You know, it seems like it's it's not something that's going to happen every day. You'll get somebody coming and the two people can manage it. That's the first one. My preference would be an online approval system. And I know that we've had experience with the companies and intellectual property thing, but that's no reason why we shouldn't be going in that direction. It's the way the whole world is going, and it's where I think we should be going to get these things done. The problem with that system is if you come across a problem and there's no one to ask, you know, that is always a problem, but there must be methods of dealing with that. All of us now, whatever we apply for, it's all online, you know. So I don't think we should rule out some of the other options here. But yeah, okay, I'll leave it there because it is the one-stop shop that I think is could be a problem because on the first slide with the pink, green and blue tops and the timelines, the application and designation process starts with the applicant submits the application. That doesn't take into account how long it takes to get that application done and in. That could be another few weeks, you know. So I think we need to get an understanding about how the one-stop shop is going to work.
All right. Over to yourself, both of you, DTI, as well as Advocate Vanda Merva. Shall we start with DTI then?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. Yes, Honourable James, we looked at the international perspectives, a few countries in Africa and Asia, for instance, Mauritius, Egypt, Kenya, Malaysia, and of course Indonesia. that I can remember right now. And actually, we found that there, for instance, have been various changes from one model to the other. In other words, the model that is adopted at that point in time is normally a function of what called the needs or the factors that are actually affecting that particular car at that point in time. For instance, I'll make an example. In Egypt, they initially adopted a model where they put everything under one roof. Actually, that one difference was that it was not focused on SEZ part to the investment promotion for the whole country. But where there was less cooperation, as Honorable Fundamentals alluded to, then there was a need to amend the legislation and come up with a more stronger legislation and also a way or a system whereby all the parties would agree and cooperate. So they had to revise their models, but now we are told that it's working quite well. Turnaround times have improved. The staff, they are very professional and as a result, they are able to attract more investors because of that. So My take on this international best practice is that, we also looked at our own, hence we gave, for instance, a few examples of models that are there, that we felt they have worked well in common in many countries. And we looked at what can really work, because we also touched base with some departments to find out what can really work now. Even if we are hoping to get a more comprehensive model or a more integrated model in the future. And we found that whilst the departments are familiarizing themselves with this kind of work or approach, some of them are amenable to this accounts manager issue because I think it makes them feel that they still play a role in this thing. And actually, if there could be a flexibility in that area, we felt it's something that we can propose as a short-term a solution to this, and something that we think it can work very well. I understand even for other entities in the country, they have similar arrangements with departments like Home Affairs, where you have an account manager there. So we said, okay, if this is something that works already for some people, maybe we can use it efficiently to the advantage of this program. And, of course, the accountability mechanisms, we talk about the intergovernmental cooperation, we talk about the protocols that the minister should enter into with various departments and agencies, where, for instance, those will be reduced into agreements in terms of how what will be the role of those departments. And we not only the roles, but we agree on the expectation in terms of turnaround times and also the role of the DDI and SEZs in that regard. So that is where, for instance, the lines of accountability begin at that level, where we agree. We want to make this to be sort of on the basis of agreement, even though the legislation will be there giving framework, but we also want to, so that we get the maximum cooperation from various parties that will be involved. And the accountability will also be strengthened by, for instance, we are going to involve the portfolio committee, parliament, in this regard to report in terms of where the bottlenecks are. If, for instance, we feel that this particular one, we need the intervention of parliament, and we include it in our report. So that is the kind of accountability that we are talking about. And then I think Advocate Van der Merwe will respond to this, the time frame, but we work together with her in terms of the time frames. The basis of it was also in terms of the existing IDZ regulation, where we looked at the application process, if we have to receive the application, consider the application, and the consideration involves evaluation, technical evaluation of the application, and also public hearings process. We need to give, in the existing IDZ regulation, the public hearing process, where the public participates and make comments and inputs, is given 60 days. In other words, are expected to consult with the public and consolidate and consider their responses within that 60 days. So we looked at those time frames as indicative of what could be here. Of course, if we talk about improvement in the turnaround times, maybe we can do better, but this is just indicative for now. And Honorable Gabasa, you were referring to this one of the models of the one stop shop, this one, where you have one window shop, the commercial building. There, I think usually they put, for instance, they have on this commercial board. It's just an entity that is there to receive. It's appointed usually by government to do this work. I don't think the applicants have to pay this service provider. It's just a service. But other countries, they prefer to have this separate entity that deals with that, that has people who are employed on a full-time basis. And you find that usually it happens in countries that actually are looking at the country as a whole, where you have big numbers of investors coming in per month. So you need a much more well-capacitated body to deal with that kind of demand for applications. Hence their point that it's just a commercial board that is usually appointed to deal with that kind of work. And when I refer to America, you asked the question why we chose B and E. Yeah, I think I've touched on that already in terms of, in particular, E, where we say we've seen in testing the waters, we've seen that for some departments, if not most, they are prepared to have senior people to be full-time account managers there in their own, within their own department. And we felt maybe this could be a short-term solution where, for instance, you provide that resource within a short space of time. But as you rightly say, ideally is to move towards an online approval. But when you have an online approval, you are also mindful of the need. For instance, there's a need personal contact where people, while they are troubled with the online things, they will need to call someone. Maybe there's a line where you can call and ask questions, or you require further information in that regard. Hence, even in the long run, we feel there should be a human element that will also deal with investors in terms of, for instance, information provision and also answering some of the questions that they might have. Even if they are troubled with the online applications. So that is what's called a long-term thing that we are proposing. Of course, we are also mindful of the fact that the online system might take a bit longer to develop. That's why I want, as a short-term measure, to have these account managers that are beginning to do the work as soon as possible as we are establishing this online system. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. There were just one or two issues I wanted to look at myself, and we were just trying to clarify them. I think it was again before the 4th, and also on the 4th again, the issues around the PFMA had come up, and we did ask you today perhaps to just pinpoint those within the legislation per se. I don't know if that you were able to address that. You know, that came up under the clause of the alignment with other legislation. All right. So, look, if you haven't got to address it per se, obviously we'll have to look at it another day, but I wouldn't like you to respond if you didn't look at it.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think some of the amendments, maybe we might have, it was just an oversight not to highlight here, but we have proposed some amendments in the bill in that regard. But maybe we can come back to show you what are we actually proposing. For instance, port of entry. Yes, we've addressed them, but maybe we could have highlighted them in the presentation for the benefit of the committee to enhance here.
Because with due respect, it's exactly what you're going to do today. It's why we allocate the 3 hours. You see, and to me it's a little bit, of course I'm, you know, I'm also taking into consideration that the DDT is not here today as well, and I'm not sure just when the bereavement did take place, which may have meant that he was not working with you, you know, the whole of the week that you were. There may have been those challenges that you experienced. But quite a few other issues that have not been addressed, you see. So it does disturb me. But let us just see, you know, as you say, you are working on them, but we don't want you to keep on working on them until after July. But let's just see what Advocate van der Merwe, the two of you, I'm sure, not just the two of you, but the team work together. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Bertin. There are quite a number of amendments that will be proposed to the bill. So what currently the approach was to focus on the 5 big issues, get that sorted. In the meantime, between the drafting DTI and myself, we started looking at the public hearing comment, the tinier things, like the comment on the port of entry, you know, whether it should be advisory board versus board. Now, there is a document prepared, but we've not started, we don't have a finalized A list. The drafting team is also working on the A-list. Advocate Stratum is working on an A-list, but that is not a document that we want to put before the committee yet until we know where the committee is going. So what we propose, and that I've discussed with the State Law Advisor, and because of the large number of amendments, small amendments, not big things, small things, but in a number of places throughout the bill, we're proposing that we work with a track change document. Now, DDI had prepared a track change document, and we had discussed the issues that from Parliament side, where when I look at the public hearings, what I would propose or recommend should be amended, and what DDI felt should be amended. So where we could not reach an agreement, those are highlighted in a separate document. And that is simply something where the committee needs to maybe listen to what my recommendation would be, what DDI's argument is, and then the committee will make a decision. And then once we have that, that is when we will put the A-list before the committee. But there is definitely a bill that the committee can start working on that deals with all the smaller amendments.
Thank you very much for that clarification. We should, judging from what was here on my right. Thank you very much. Now just give me a minute while we look at this and see how best we can deal with it as we proceed further.
Transshipment, storage,
repackaging or processing, subject, customs, import procedures. A free trade zone, that is other report. Free trade zone means a duty-free area offering storage and distribution facilities for value-added activities within the special economic zone for subsequent transshipment or re-export. And then we go to the municipal entity, still on page 4. Municipal entity, before it has been written, has the meaning ascribed to it. But our proposal is that it's written in red, means a municipal entity defined in section 1 of the Municipal System Act. And if we go further down to operator permit, operator permit, we are proposing this wording, means an operator permit is issued in terms of section 31, subsection 4 of this bill. And then port of entry means a place designated as a place of entry for the control of vessels, aircraft, trains, vehicles, goods and persons entering the public. And then prescribed, we are proposing that prescribed should read as means prescribed by regulation made in terms of this act. And then public entity, we are proposing this amendment to read as means a public entity defined in section 1 and listed in schedules 2 and 3 of the Public Finance Management Act. And then further down, that is the last paragraph of page 4, sector development zone means a zone forecast on the development of a specific sector or industry through the facilitation of general or specific industrial infrastructure, incentives, technical and business services, primarily for the export market.
Just a minute, I think to I think we must all have the same page, because that part of it is on page 5 for me. Right, just hold there for a moment, please, Chief Director. I was just on the point of asking Advocate Van der Merwe to come in with your comments here on page 4.
Thank you, Chiefers. From my document, I just need to point out, make clear that there are some technical amendments that I did not highlight in my document. It is not something that the committee needs to concern itself about. It is, for instance, on page 2, we've changed the wording board to advisory board, apologies, page 3. So in chapter 3, in that table of we'll have to change advisory board there. Something else is the insertions of the definitions of free port, free trade zone. Those should move to clause 23 where they were initially, because they only appear in one clause. But that's a technical issue. It's not about the content. So I did not weigh down this document with that. That will, from a drafting point of view, we'll sort that out. And then we'll highlight that to the committee. Right. My first comment is just on person, and I think in fact that was skipped. What happened is that there was a definition for person to include a trust and a foundation. The concern in the public hearings is that on page 4 under operator permit, you will see there's a gap, and then next to that you will see deleted in the comments block, person includes trust and foundation. The comments were that when you look at person being used throughout the bill, it is not always that it should include a trust or a foundation. For instance, a person is appointed to the board, the advisory board. Now, I've discussed this with the state law advisor as well, and he says to me, well, the interpretation from their side is that it is the normal definition, but it also includes the trust and foundation, and then when you appoint your board member, logic will tell you it can't be a trust or a foundation. So I've heard what he said, and I think I can agree with that, but now it has been deleted. So my question is, this now means that operator which is the other term in this bill that uses the word person. Before, an operator could have been a trust or a foundation, and now that is no longer the case. I'm not saying it right or wrong, but that is the implication of that deletion. So that is just something that the committee needs to consider when we delete the definition for person. Do we want an operator the body that applies as an operator, that it should also be a trust or a foundation? Because it's not there. The normal definition for person is legal and natural. Legal needs to be a common law definition that makes you a person, or a statutory definition that makes you a person. Thank you.
No, thank you very much,
Ms. Herling. I mean, Advocate Van der Merwe. The problem with juggling with pills and glasses and mics. Right. We're back to page 4 as well. We have further definitions here. I'm just looking at the draft. Department Public Entity, etc., page 436.
Apologies, but I did not notice that one. The proposal here, and that is simply a choice of wording, what reads easier to the committee. For definition of public entity, it is simply where the word Public Finance Management Act is. Does it read easier if it is immediately after section 1, or does it read easier at the end of the sentence? It is currently public entity means a public entity as defined in section 1 and listed in schedules 2 and 3 of the Public Finance Management Act, or does it read easier if we say public entity means a public entity as defined in section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act and listed in schedules 2 and 3 to that act. It's nothing legal, it is simply which reads easier to the committee. Thank you.
Now that was page 4, and we continue on what is our page 5 then, Chief Director, Mr. Saka.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah. On page 5, Special Economic Zones Board means the Board of Directors of an individual Special Economic Zone entity. So our proposed amendment is entity, to add the word entity. So it goes with the clarification of roles and responsibilities, as we indicated before that there were some errors in terms of writing a license instead of writing Special Economic Zone Board. And this act, that is the following line, this act includes any regulation made in terms of this act. That is why we are proposed. We added the word this act in the end and deleted section 40. And if we go still on the same page under chapter 2, section 4, subsection 1, a special economic zone is an economic development tool to promote national economic growth. We've added the word national. And subsection 2 under section 4, that is subsection 2A, the purpose of establishing special economic zones includes facilitating creation of an industrial complex having strategic national economic advantage. We added the word again, national. If we may proceed, Honourable Member, to page 6. Section 5, that is on top of page 6. The minister may determine policy for the designation, promotion, development, operation and management of special economic zones after consultation with the advisory board. We added the word advisory. We are proposing that amendment. And then section 6 under special economic zone strategy, section 6, subsection 1, the minister must determine a special economic zone strategy after consultation with the advisor board. Again, okay, proposing addition of the word advisory. Under chapter 3, still on the same page 6, section 7, subsection 2, the minister must appoint not more than 15 persons as members of the advisory board. So we are, the advisory, the word advisory will come prominent wherever we are mentioning board now. And then on section 7, subsection D, we are proposing deletion of one representative of the department responsible for economic development. And subsection H, one representative of the Development Bank of Southern Africa. If you remember, Honorable Chair, we proposed removal of that and instead adding two more independent experts to the board. So as a result, in subsection K, we are proposing 5 independent persons instead of 3. Yes.
And when you come to all these advisories, just indicate, because they are in red. I'm looking at everyone as I say that. It's very clear where they are, and we're well aware as to why they're there, per se. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. In the section 3, subsection K, section 5, subsection A, section B, section 5, subsection B, and C. All we've added advisor in subsection 6 as well.
Sure.
Advisor. Whenever we mention a board, we are proposing addition of advisor. Yes. And if I may go to subsection 6, because there we are proposing more amendment, we say no person below the position of director general or, where appropriate, deputy director general. So we are proposing amendment, addition of the word, or where appropriate, deputy director general. In other words, we don't want someone below that.
All right. Thank you, Chief Director. We turn to Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can just point something out, the position on this, on my document refers to the bill as introduced. Not to the document by DTI. So the bill as introduced. That's where I've got the lines and the pages from. But my next comment relates to subclause 7Z, that the DTI is now the next point of the DTI. But maybe while we're there, let me explain to members what the difference is. What the DTI has done here is to provide for the minister to appoint alternate members and to provide for these members to be standing alternates to ensure continuity, which is what the members requested. So the only thing that I'm proposing something different on is whether this is something that the minister must do or may do. My recommendation would be that the minister may appoint an alternate, simply because that allows the minister to not appoint when he or she can't find a suitable alternate. Otherwise, the minister is actually, you know, having a problem with the legislation forcing. The next issue is whether...
The problem is it's just a technicality. It's basically our page 4, 7 that we're looking at in relation to this plus, of course, your document.
Yes, apologies.
It's on the top of page 7.
It's on the top of page 7 of the document with the track changes. So the other issue is whether the appointment must be at the same time as when the members are being appointed versus whether it should simply be a blanket authorization of the minister to appoint an alternate member. The reason for my recommendation that it is not at the same time is simply because it might be that the minister might not find the correct person at the same time, or the alternate might no longer be available, and the minister may have to appoint again. But again, this is not something that's necessarily legal in nature. It is simply from experience with members complaining about boards not functioning well, etc., etc. I'm simply highlighting that and making a proposal of something that could be considered.
Right. Okay. In a way, we've moved on to page 7. I'm also going to ask members to take a short tea break. We've just walked in at 10, and it's just from past 20 to 11. If we can be back just about 1:45 or so. 12. Well, there we are. Yes.
I think what we have now.
Hoping we can get the team back. are again, all fresh. I think Charmaine, I mean, Advocate at the Minerva, you were just at the last end here in CLS, so she's a member contemplated in subsection 2A, 2 small Roman B, appointed. And I'm just looking, you're still talking on that advisory board issue there. You more or less finished that, completed it, as I understood from my notes here. And and I think you also gave the explanation, right. So we're then, as it were, in theory, we were still on page 6, line 40, but in actual fact, it deals with the same issue, right. Until we go to your page, in your notes, page 9. Would that be correct? All right. So then we're still with yourself, then, Chief Director, on page 7, with, it looks like just the, apart from 7 and 8, it's a couple of definitions.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Yeah. Mostly on page 7, we are proposing an addition of advisor in front of board, that is under terms of office, under section 8, subsection 1, under the heading disqualification for membership of advisory board, section 9, the first line there, and then the heading vacation of office, and then section 10, subsection 1, and 10, subsection 1C, 2, and section and the heading, function of advisory board, and section 11, 1. So those are additions of the word advisory. And then if we go back to section 8, subsection 1, we are proposing further amendments there. Members of the advisory board appointed in section 7, subsection 2A to G, are appointed by virtue of their office. Then, section 8, subsection 2, members of the advisory board appointed in section 7, subsection 2, H to I, and section H and I, that is, when you go to A, hold office for a period of 5 years from the date of their appointment by the minister, and subsection B may be eligible for reappointment on expiry of their term of office for no more than one additional term of office. So those are the proposed amendments there. I think I'm done with page 7.
Page 8.
Still on section 11, but on page 8 now, subsection F, liaise with a special economic zone board and an operator. So instead of license, we've deleted license and we've replaced it with a special economic zone board. G, advise the minister on minimum norms and standards required for the provision of a one-stop shop in a special economic zone. So that is an addition there to the G. And then all others are advisory, the word advisory, yeah, to provide more clarity. Yes.
Page 9.
Section 13, subsection 4, 5, it's advisory, the word advisory, and the heading, meetings of advisory board, section 14.1, 14.2, A, B, section 14.4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8B, and 9, and 9B, 10, and heading resolution of advisory board, and section 15.1, two places then, and section 15.1, and then other committees of advisory boards still on the same page. That's section 16.1 and 16.2, the word advisor, inclusion of the word advisor.
Thank you very much, Chief Director. We then turn to Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. My next comment is actually in the document of the DTI, only on page 10, at clause 19. So they can still continue from 16 to 19.
Page 10. Okay. Page 10, still section 16, subsection 3, and the heading, Secretariat of Advisory Board, and section 17, subsection 8, and the heading, Expenditure, Remuneration, and Allowances, and subsection 18, section 18, subsection 1 and 2, and this heading, Dissolution of Advisory Board, and section 19, subsection 1 and subsection 2, all is about inclusion of the word advisory. And then last part under page 10, under support measures, there's a heading, what, implementation protocol. Oh, okay.
So we'll just hold on there for a moment, Chief Director. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, dear Business. On my document, the reason I am pointing something out to this committee on the dissolution of the advisory board is simply that when you look at the function of the board, the seniority of the members on that board, the functions that they must fulfill. Usually when we have a board being dissolved, there is provision made for an interim body and the reappointment of that board. That is not done here. I'm not saying it is wrong. I'm just saying what the practice is. It will be for this committee to then decide whether what the department is proposing is that the board can be dissolved and the department will take over the functions of the board. So there is a possibility that we can say the department can, the minister can dissolve the board, but must make provision for an interim board. And then we can choose, after I've sort of made a proposal of two members from this section, two members from that category, that is something that can be debated, but some form of interim board that takes the function for a certain period, whereafter the board again is re-established. So that is what the proposal there is. It's not a legal issue again. It is simply based on practice. Thank you.
So under current legislation here now that's been put before us, dissolution does not put an interim board in place. And in fact, it would simply depend on if we can identify people at that time. And that is your proposal at that time. Fine. Thank you. We'll take that on board for discussion. Can we continue then? And I think at this point we go back to yourselves, DTI.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Still on page 10, the inclusion of proposed inclusion of heading implementation protocol, and that takes us to page 11, section 22, subsection 1. We propose that it reads as Minister may enter into an implementation protocol in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act of 2005 with any government department or organ of the state of state that the minister may deem appropriate, including A, the minister responsible for environmental affairs, B, the minister responsible for home affairs, C, the minister responsible for labor, or D, the South African Revenue Services. Then we deleted E, that is any other organ of state that the minister may deem appropriate. Then subsection 2, the implementation protocol may deal with A, implementation and operation of a one-stop shop, B, any other matter requiring the coordination of the functions of government and organs of state as may be appropriate or required for the proper regulation and development of sterile economic zones. Three, the minister must table a report before Parliament annually on the manner in which the one-stop shop is being implemented and how the one-stop shop contributes to the ease of doing business in a special economic zone. May I proceed?
One moment there. Can we turn to Advocate Fannie Merva, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. The first issue, but it's more technical, I think, and there's a couple of technical issues in the clause that the drafting team will look at and correct. The one issue that I need to just discuss with the drafting team and also in my own office is if we look at the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act and the specific section that deals with protocol, section 35, it speaks of organs of state entering into protocols with each other. Now, in practice, it is the minister, but should be then worded that way. So it is simply an unease that I have, but I will come back to the committee on whether it's the correct wording to say the minister should be the one entering into the protocol or the department, how to word so that it's aligned with that act. And then the second issue there is the clause 22.3. What I would recommend is that make the word slightly more simplified so that it reads, the minister must annually table a report before, first of all, not Parliament, but the National Assembly, because Parliament means both houses. I'm not sure that this is an issue, unless there is an indication that there is something that the National Council provinces need to have regard to, then I would recommend National Assembly. And then I would include to that the report must also refer to protocols. What protocols have been entered into? What are their progress? What is their concerns? In fact, that was one of the answers that came out, was that Parliament will be looked to assist in those protocols, but then it needs to be part of a report. So on the protocols contemplated in Section 22, concluded and implemented, as well as the implementation of one-stop shops in special economic zones. So just to simplify it a little bit, so that the report can go broad enough to actually elicit Parliament's, or this committee's rather, assistance in that oversight. Again, it's just ease of reading, looking at implementation. It's nothing necessarily legal in nature except for the contracting party. But that I will come back to members.
Right, so we've actually got three issues left so far that require serious deliberation. This is the third one. Right. Yes, Honourable
Adeli. Is this not classified as Section 76? Because this is 76, then it covers for the management thereof is both the National Assembly and the SOP. So that we don't flex something, we don't need to flex. I don't know.
It says
the thing is, it is actually it's PTAG 76 bill, and in that respect, it would automatically proceed to two houses, the issue itself. So we'll, you know, in that case, it is the two houses of Parliament, because, but of course, it is initially tabled here, the National Assembly, and that may be the procedural issue that would be involved here. Section 76, but tabled here. And then it's going to work on. So let's just take that look, you know, check one comment on the...
Thank you, Chairperson. The reason why I was asking whether it should be both houses is that the bill itself is tracked as 76 because it deals with regional development. Now, the issue on which a report is being requested deals with protocols and with the one-stop shop itself. So you're almost looking at national cooperation. So that's why I was saying, I'm not sure. To me, it sounds like, because it is simply the protocol issue, simply the one-stop shop, that it need only come to the National Assembly. But it might as we proceed in debate, it might come up that, no, there are issues that involve provinces, and then it should be both houses.
That's why I say, look, let's flag this issue and keep it in mind as we continue through the bill itself. All right. Let's just see where we are then. We're still with yourself, then, Advocate, the in consultation, etc., the tabling, Minister May in consultation, etc. Here you've got the Minister of Finance, the reference there.
That it is simply renumbered, but that is only on page 12 in the DTI document.
The DTI, right, thank you. The DTI document, which is where we were on page 11, and in fact we had, I think, dealt with that at the top, didn't we, the implementation, etc. And we got to chapter 5.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you, chapter 5, still on page 11, under the designation of special economic zones, section 23, subsection 2, we're proposing the addition of the word national government industrial development objectives. That is the word national. And then subsection 3, and under section 23, subsection 3C, we are proposing deletion of the word end. Instead, we include or. In other words, it reads as indicate the extent to which it owns or controls, because you can either own the piece of land or control through the lease agreement or any other alternative agreement. Yes. And subsection 4 under section 23 and subsection 5, subsection 6, the inclusion of the word advisory. But on subsection 6, we are also proposing, and after consultation with the Minister of Finance. Actually, the Advocate Panda Mere is proposing in.
So. We come to yourself, Advocate Panda Mere. Thank you.
Sorry to interrupt, I just want to ask, under C3C, should it not read and or? 3C. Right, so, I mean, you've replaced and with or. Isn't it and or? I mean, it's possible clearly to own and control.
That, as it reads here, to indicate the extent to which it owns or controls the area. That's part of the proposal. All right, 3C. That's, initially it said owns and controls. Here's offering you a choice. You needn't own it, but you could control it. I don't know if you still wish to come in there.
No, I mean, as mutually exclusive, that's fine, but aren't there circumstances where you own and control it? Therefore, you... No. You would have to read, it owns and or control.
English degree. So then we'll keep it like that.
So I think we should have to consider what the state law advisor has said and implement that. I'm looking at the ETI advocate and the parliamentary advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we agree definitely with the state law advisor on the all or the and. In fact, the all reads not reads better, but I think it's the better choice of word, because it might be that someone owns the land but is leasing it, then they don't control it. Or they are leasing it, then they control it, but they don't own it. Now, what the all allows is that situation will be covered both ways. But if a person owns certain areas and owns certain but does not control it, or the other way around, it does not prohibit that person from putting both forward. It's simply that the and indicates almost a must. You must own and control, whereas the or gives the flexibility.
Yes, a state law advisor.
Yes, I agree with her, but just, I want just to emphasize that we will retain the O as it is there, but after controls, we put the ways O both, so that in the event that you come in a decision, so that where you own and control the land, you are also covered in terms of the land. So there will be O both after control.
Now, how about you reading that? Is this right, an advocate in Guka?
Yes, right. It must then indicate the extent to which it owns or controls or both the area to be considered for the nation as a special economic zone. So on both, then it covers the good way it controls or it.
Yes, DTI,
advocate
Strangerman, I got the impression that where you were happy.
I hope so. If it's not a happy look, I'm happy in any event. Whether the look is happy doesn't matter. No. Madam Chair, there might be a small technicality, but let's not make a debate of a technicality in here, with all due respect to the Honourable Members. We'll sort it out internally. Thanks, Madam Chair.
There'll be an internal resolution. Fine. It takes us further. So we can move forward then, Honourable James. And you see now what that little grammatical point is to us. Well, yes, no. Oh, gosh. I think the after and the end provoked such political deliberation in the committee. I'm not sure that we want to walk backwards. Who can walk backwards anyway? Can we just go to advocates and move?
Thank you, Chairperson. My concern is actually not the after in, well, it will now be in the document that comes from the DTI. That is clause 23 on page 12. I don't have a concern with the after consultation there. My concern is in clause 24 on page 12, clause 24.4, where we now have in consultation. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I'm just saying we must keep in mind that means that when the Minister DTI wants to prescribe the type of service and business, the Minister of Finance will have to agree. And I'm not sure that that is the intention.
Is in consultation, yes, if we have that on record, Honourable Van der Merwe.
That's important, yeah. It's on record, sorry.
It was a discussion in our last bill, and we were told that in implies concurrence. So that's the definitive rule on that. So I think on page 12 or whatever page you've got, because mine is slightly different, that it must be after consultation in clause 24.
I think we are the same thing, because we've got two on page 24. We've got the top there, which was probably clause 23, that was the minister after considering the recommendation of the advisory board and after consultation with the Minister of Finance, would designate. Well, this is the one where the advocate, Van der Merwe, parliamentary said, no problem, doesn't see a problem, would agree with you then and ourselves. But then she indicated, if I'm correct, that further down under clause 24, If I understood you, you had a different opinion. Perhaps you could explain.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. In clause 24, sub 4, it reads that the Minister may, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, prescribe the type of service and business that may be located in a special economic zone. And I'm just saying, I'm not sure that that is the correct word to use, because it means that the Department of the Minister of Trade and Industry can only prescribe a type of service and business to be located in special economic zone if the Minister of Finance agrees to that type of service and business. And I would recommend actually that that goes to after consultation. In other words, Minister of Finance can give his inputs, Mr. DGI will consider, and then make the final decision. So I would recommend that 24-4 must also be after consultation.
I mean, even if it's really zonal issues, basically. No, after would mean he's in concurrence. What does that mean? No. It is in concurrence. After? Maybe, well, I have another way of looking at it, but I won't express it yet. The after then. So we think we would prefer to change that to alt after, not if, the second one. For the reasons given. I think that's very clear. All right. And then carry on then. I think by the sound of it then, we would then move back to DTI.
Yes, I'm not going to say we are now at section 25 under governance and management of special economic zone, subsection 1. We are proposing to read as, upon designation of an area as a special economic zone, licensee must establish an entity to manage the special economic zone. Subsection 2. In the case of a national or provincial government or a public entity licensee, the special economic zone entity must be established as a national government business enterprise or a provincial government business enterprise contemplated in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act. Subsection 3, in the case of a municipality or municipal entity licensee, the special economic zone entity must be established as a municipal entity contemplated in Section 1 of the Municipal Systems Act. Subsection 4, in the case of a public-private partnership licensee, the Special Economic Zone entity must be established as a CAMPA. So those are proposed amendments. Mm-hmm. And then if I move to subsection 5 is some deletions. Yeah. And then, it's numbering, a change of numbering, because we've added some subsections. Yeah. And then subsection 6, it's the addition of the word entity after special economic zone. The word special economic zone is as a geographic area, so there was an omission of the word entity. And then under subsection 6b, we are proposing that should read as, in accordance with the Municipal Systems Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act, if the licensee is a municipality or municipal entity, that is municipality or, that is a proposed addition there. Page 13. Section 25, subsection 7. That's on page 13. Upon establishing the special economic zone entity in subsection 1, the licensee must provide the special economic zone entity with the resources and means necessary to manage and operate the special economic zone, including the transfer of ownership or control of the land comprising the area designated as a special economic zone. So that is an addition or an added clause that we are proposing in subsection 7.
Right, if you just hold on there. Thank you. Advocate Linda Merva.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got two issues that I would like to raise here. The first emanates from the public hearing. The concern was indicated in the public hearing that it is not the licensee that establishes a government business entity or a municipal entity, there's a different authority that actually has the mandate or establishing. So my proposal is that we actually should insert, and here I am using the word in consultation, because it is not for that licensee to establish. It must be done with the agreement of the relevant authority. So my proposal is that we insert that the licensee must, in consultation with the relevant authority, establish an entity to manage the special economic zone. Simply so that the licensee does not find itself in a position where it can't comply with this act. And then the last thing here, it's not something that is critical, but it might assist in the implementation phase. One of the things that members brought up last week was the time that something might take. So a thought that I had was that in your Companies Act, we make provision for pre-incorporation contracts to be concluded. Now, you need to make provision for that in legislation. Otherwise, you have to do transfer of agreements, etc., etc. Now, we can give the authority to the licensee to actually enter into an agreement already with an operator before the SEZ entity is established. But then we need to do that by way of a pre-incorporation clause. Now, I've done it very short, simply the mandate or pre-incorporation clause. If the committee says, look, this might actually assist in bringing the timelines down, then I think we might also have to look at certain other things, how it must be ratified, et cetera, or maybe link it to the Companies Act in some way. But it's simply a proposal. It's not something that must. It was just a thought of how to get the timelines shorter. Thank you.
To conduct the business and establish this. Yes, GTI Chief Director.
Thank you, Chair. Page 13, Section 26 under Strategic Plan. Subsection 1, we propose a deletion of the word licensee and replace it with Special Economic Zone Board. The same with Subsection 3 of Section 26. Deletion of licensee and replacement with Special Economic Zone Board. And Section 27 as well as Section 28.1, Subsection 1. And Section 29, Subsection 1 as well. The inclusion of the word advisory and deletion of the word licensee and replacing them with Special Economic Zone Board. The same on page 14. On top of page 14, that is under section 29, subsection 1, A and B, replacement of the word licensee with a Special Economic Zone Board. And section 29, subsection 3, inclusion of the word advisory before the board. And the heading there.
All right, are you going on to the pool then?
Yes, Advocate Van der
Merwe. Thank you, Chair. If I can take the committee back to the new clause 28 on page 13. Clause 28.1, paragraph A, the word to some extent it is a technical amendment, but I thought I need to explain, because if it's accepted as a technical amendment, it will bring in quite a long sentence. If we read it now, a Special Economic Zone Board must keep full and proper records of its financial affairs. It means the financial affairs of the board. Whereas I think that the intention here is to keep full and proper records of the financial affairs of the Special Economic Zone entity. So my proposal there is that the word "its" must be replaced with the financial affairs of the Special Economic Zone entity. Thank you.
Members, we've got that as a proposal and it's already captured here. Fine, can we move on then? Thank you. And we move on to 28, also from yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then on page 14, the new clause 29.
Just
Senator van der Merwe?
Yes.
State Lord Gallagher.
Some sort of, maybe Advocate Van der Merwe speak out, but now there's something that's going on the line. Maybe there were some other instances, for instance, such as that, like that one, that might not have been picked up. So, for instance, my proposal is just for members as well to consider. For instance, starting from Section 25, where it deals with the government and management of the special economic zone. My contribution only with regard to the Special Economic Zone Board. For instance, if you can put there as one of the sections there, that is the entity, because we established the entity was there. So if you can put as one of the subsections there that the entity acts through a Special Economic Zone Board, like the board that then is established by the licensee. And then in all those parts that where it deals, which is referred to a Special Economic Zone Board, we say the entity, do we know that the entity can act on itself? There must be a board that acts on behalf of the entity. So we put the entity there, but the entity will act through the board. So we put all those things, so that references such as like there that Advocate Panamera was referring to, where it says you must keep the financial affairs of the board, whereas that the intention in that is to reflect the entity, so that is covered, then we don't have that problem, as long as we know that the entity is through a board, which is a Special Economic Zone Board, and we make that clear in the section where the entity is established, and then we replace the word Special Economic Zone Board with the entity, so that we know that is the entity that is referred to, whereas the entity will be acting through the board, because the entity is impersonal. It cannot act itself, of course, it will act through the board. It's the same way the Kanban, it always refers to the Kanban, but we know the Kanban acts through the board of directors. And it doesn't say in the Kanban act that the board of directors. It always refers to the Kanban, but we know that the Kanban acts through the board of directors. So it's the same, for instance, even with that issue that she said, it says the Kanban must keep financial reports of all of that and that. But we know for the fact that this will be the board that does that. So it's just to maintain that consistent also with here. Because even under the private partnership, where is the company that is established? Of course, that company also establishes, it will have the board, which is then run, you see, so that it covers both of them. So you can put the entity there, so that it we know it for the fact. So that is my contribution for members to consider, for that consistency in law and all of that.
Yes, I think you're referring to governance, which is also on clause 25.5 of DTI, is it not, where it makes those references again about the special economic zone board, as it were. Right. And I think the clarification the committee accepts really with respect to that. Just while you were on that clause, though, I noticed that under 25.6, it said the Special Economic Zone Board must manage that special economic zone entity and not the special economic zone entity. But I think the principles are all acceptable then. I'm looking at parliamentary legal advocate, Charlotte van der Merwe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with what the chairperson just said, and Advocate and myself, our British has also discussed, and in fact, we fully agree with the State Law Advisors set out that we rather talk about the entity than the board, definitely.
All right. It looks like we are making progress then. And had you completed the point you were making then for 28? Advocate Van der Merwe, I'm looking before we move on to the withdrawal, you know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the taking over of administration, I still have one point left, and that deals with consultation. It is now the new Clause 29. My recommendation is that
when the administration of the zone is taken over, all the affected parties must be consulted. Who is currently consulted is only the advisory board that actually is advising the department, and has nothing to do with administration. I'm not saying it's not a good party to consult, but the only party that is consulted on the administration is the board of the special economic zone. Now, if we follow what the state law advisors say, already one of the concerns is being fixed, because then it will be the entity itself that's consulted. But I'm also of the opinion that the shareholder of the entity should be consulted, which is the licensee. Because the licensee is the holder of this company or entity, that is now the whole administration is being taken over. So that is the first recommendation that I'm making. On 29.2, last week I said something in answer to a question from the members on contracts. And the question was, but will the contracts remain intact when this administrator takes over? And DTI said yes, which made me realize something. When an administrator is appointed, often there are contracts that are not to the benefit of the entity. And those contracts must be ended. Now, if we don't give that power to this administrator, because already the Companies Act, I went to look, Companies Act no longer speaks of an administrator, they speak of business rescue. So we can't even fall back on that principle. This administrator is now a new concept again in law. We'll have to make provision for the administrator to be able to terminate a contract if that contract is to the detriment of the zone. For instance, if the zone approved a business to locate in the special economic zone, which the minister did not prescribe may settle in that zone, that zone may lose its designation because it now no longer complies with the conditions. Your administrator will then have to have the authority to terminate the contract with that business in order to make the zone operational, complain again. So I was just thinking that might be something that we actually do need to give power to the administrator. Then in 3.3, this is where the minister acts without any consultation because there's an emergency. Now, I think the fact that we have an emergency, there's clearly some facts for the minister. I don't think the minister will easily take this step. So there will be facts before the minister that indicate serious financial misconduct of some sort. And that is when the minister steps in without any consultation and puts the administrator in. My concern is that in law, you have to listen to the other party. You can't just judge and make a final decision. So although I am supportive of the emergency action being taken, I'm recommending that the committee consider some form of consultation afterwards in which the decision is then reviewed. So I'm proposing to say that provided that the minister, after consultation with all these entities, the advisory board, the licensee, the zone board concerned, must review the appointment. And I'm saying after consultation. They don't have to agree. But just that the minister has listened to the other side, must review the appointment within 90 days of the appointment of that administrator. I think my wording might not be 100% technically correct, but it's more to just convey the message. You need to have some form of consultation at some stage. Thank you.
Yes, certainly administrative justice would point to that one as well on issues. And the state law advisor in this particular regard, it looked like you were nodding then, Advocate Nguka.
Yes, ma'am. Completely concur with what the parliamentary state advisor said.
That brings us again in alignment and into line with the Companies Act as well in that respect. Okay. So, we move then through clause 29, looking at both DTI and the parliamentary legal advisor there. We can move on to the withdrawal of, hang on, is this, just looking at form, especially kind of before withdrawing designation, still coming, you see page 13 there, yeah. All right, DTI.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Under withdrawal of designation, we are proposing deletion of the word suspension, and so it will read as withdrawal of designation without the word suspension. And then section 30, subsection 1, it will read, notwithstanding section 29, deleting 28, because the numbering has now changed.
Yes.
And then after that, the addition of the word advisor before the word board. And then deletion of suspend or. So in other words, the whole sentence will read as, notwithstanding section 29, the minister may, after considering a recommendation of the advisory board and by notice the government gazette, withdraw any designation of an area as a special economic zone which does not further government's industrial development objectives on such terms and conditions as the minister may. Then 80, section 80, subsection 2, before withdrawing a designation in terms of subsection 1, the minister must A, inform the affected licensee, special economic zone board, operator and businesses located in the special economic zone of the intention to withdraw the designation and the reasons for the intended withdrawal. And B, give the affected licensee, special economic zone board, operator and business 30 days to make representations to the minister. Then we have deleted the word called letting nothing contained in this act prevents the minister from redesignating an area whose designation as a special economic zone has been withdrawn. So in other words, we are moving to subsection 3, 30 subsection 3. The lawful activities of any business located within a special economic zone, that, in other words, the new word is that, A, there's no change in subsection A, but in subsection B, there are some changes or additions. And it will read as follows. Is situated in the custom controlled area of that special economic zone and has been authorized by any registration or license issued in terms of the Customs and Excise Act 1964, Act number 91 of 1964, are not affected by the withdrawal of the designation of that special economic zone in terms of this section. So the new wording proposed there for amendment is, are not affected by the withdrawal of the designation of that special economic zone in terms of this section. Subsection 5 of section 30, it's a addition as well. Nothing contained in this act prevents the minister from redesignating an area whose designation as a special economic zone has been withdrawn. In other words, we are taking back what we've deleted at the top and we are putting a subsection 5. Thanks.
Thank you. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, dear person. In this clause 3, subsection 2, paragraph B, the word is used give the affected licensees, special economic zone board, operator and businesses 30 days to make representations to the minister. Now, what we have is that a decision is being made on an administrative nature. So it needs to be reasons given and the party must be given an opportunity to respond to that. My concern is with the word representations. When we look at representation, that word, in itself it's not wrong. It has the same effect. Reasons will be given and written comments will be provided to the minister to consider. But my concern is, or concern, my unease with the word is twofold. Number one, when we look at representation, you almost have the idea of an authority that issues a license, and let's say you get a license to go hunting. You need to have that license with you because an inspector might drop up and say, where's your license? That's not what we have with an SEZ. It's a different relationship. It is not one authority that issues 100 licenses and they don't know who's there, and therefore they will issue a mega publication and people can make representations. You have a more personal relationship almost, because the minister will know there's 5 or 6 SEZs that are designated, that's who the licensees are. So Representation then is a strong word. It's a very formal type of word. Also, representation is associated with something that has already been made, a decision that's already been made. So you will make a presentation in respect of a fine that you received for that to be set aside. So I would recommend that maybe we soften that word a little bit to say either to submit written comments to the minister, or for me, first prize would be that the minister must consult the relevant parties. Just to indicate that it's not a decision that's already been taken. It's something that is being considered. And now, because it has a big impact, the withdrawal of the designation removes that entity from this program that we have here. It's a very big decision that's taken. So, like I say, it is achieving the administrative justice objective, representation. In that sense, it can remain. But I'm just a little bit uneasy, and I thought I will highlight that to the committee. It might be that someone else feels uneasy as well, and then there are other options that we can look at. Thank you.
Do you have any comment yourself, Mr. Nguka? Advocate Nguka.
I don't comment, ma'am. I'm sure the department will comment on it.
Right. Well, a little bit of silence prevailing here. Fine. Thank you very much for that. We will look at it when we deliberate in depth. I'm sure we've all made a note of that. Can we continue then with the matter DTI?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Coming to Chapter 6, still on page 14. Section 31, subsection 1, mm-hmm. It's a deletion of licensee, replacing it with Special Economic Zone Board.
Right.
So the whole sentence will now read as follows. A Special Economic Zone Board must follow a fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective procurement process when appointing an operator to develop, operate, and manage that Special Economic Zone on behalf of the Special Economic Zone Board. Subsection 2. Notwithstanding subsection 1 and subject to section 31, subsection 1, only a Special Economic Zone of a public-private partnership licensee must be developed, operated. So it may be developed, operated, and managed by that Special Economic Zone entity. The reason here, if I may be allowed, Honorable Chair, is that you'll find that in a public-private partnership, you'll have, for instance, a private party that has both financial managerial expertise, and including technical expertise. We have today in South Africa one of biggest companies that are actually competitive globally in terms of construction, and their financial muscle, they are listed in the JSE, and those are kinds of companies that if they come into partnership with the government, they can still also develop, because they have managerial expertise as well, they can develop that special economy. So, and if I don't know if I may proceed to section 32. Mm-hmm. Section 32, subsection 2, is just the replacement of licensee with Special Economic Zone Board. And subsection 3 is just replacement, inclusion of advisory board, the word advisor.
All right. Thank you, Advocate Linda Mervin.
Since my comment is actually only on the next clause, because it's now renumbered.
Well, then we have again just the number 33, the special economic zone, you know, the board. So it's just a replacement, so if you would come in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then on clause 33, sub 1, paragraph C, what we have here is the operator that is now applying for a permit. Now, when we look at the requirement for the licensee in clause 223A, it's renumbered now, it will be 233A, must indicate that it has access to sufficient capital to develop, operate, manage, and administer the special economic zone. So your licensee already has to show it has access to finance. So my question here is, why is it necessary for the operator to do the same? Because surely the operator is almost in a contractor position. He's getting paid for what he's doing. So I can understand that we want the operator to show his financial muscle, because we want to know there's not a Mickey Mouse that we're dealing with, but perhaps we can change it as well to read, have access to sufficient capital and expertise. Because then that capital, the operator can say, the licensee has the following set aside in their three-year plan that is allocated to the development of the zone. And that then should be sufficient. Otherwise, the operator might run into a situation where the operator relies on the licensee to give the money, but doesn't have it in his or her bank account.
Well, I think that's something we will take into account. Any comment from members just on that?
I think Chairperson is a reasonable selector. Inclusion should be made that access to. Because we may find that it is a process, the economic empowerment company, which is going to operate that, which does not have the cash somewhere. But as you, as the owner of that zone, who Chairperson, you can borrow that company to have a million rand every month.
Right. Thank you very much. We're back then to GTI rather quickly with the call 34, is it?
Yes, Honourable Chair. So clause 34 is just subsection 1, inclusion of the word advisory and inclusion of deletion of licensee and replacing it with special concern board.
Sure.
But then we've described agreement with the word return. So in other words, if you read now, is before issuing an operator permit in terms of section 31, subsection 4, the minister must, on the recommendation of the advisory board, be satisfied that the return agreement between the special economic zone board and the operator adequately provides for the duties, terms and conditions of the development, operation and management of that special economic zone by the operator. And 34 section 1 subsection C is that inclusion of the net advisory. And 35 is a deletion of licensee, replacing it with special economic zone board. And subsection B under 35 is a deletion of the way to the plan approved by the minister and replacing them with to the return agreement in section 34 subsection 1. So the whole sentence will read as make improvements to that special economic zone and its facilities according to the return agreement in section 34 subsection 1 and any other relevant authority.
So,
Advocate and Demerva. Thank you, Chairperson. This again is one of those issues that is not critical, but it is something that came out in the public hearings. Relating to clause 36(1), paragraph C, the concern was that the commissioners of SARS might notify the minister of a breach of or contravention of the customs and excise rules. But it might be something that the commissioner doesn't regard as serious. It might be a fine or something like that. And then he simply notifies the Minister of Trade and Industry because that is the agreement. Now the minister regards it maybe as very serious and withdraws the designation or withdraws the permit. The concern was, shouldn't it rather be that the commissioner must request? You know, so the commissioner indicates how serious the commissioner regards the contravention, and then only the minister should act. So my proposal is that the word notifies be changed to read requests. So it will read, contravenes or fails to comply with the customs and excise rules and procedures that are applicable to the operator, and the commissioner of the South African Revenue Services requests the minister accordingly. So it's simply a proposal in accordance with the public hearing comment.
And in fact, that will indicate seriousness to which this is regardless. All right. We then move on again to, what is it, clause 36.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The next issue then is consultation. And again, I'm proposing that there should be, want to make sure I've got my right comment, that there should be broader consultation. The consultation that is proposed here is simply to the operator. But my concern is that if the SEZ entity that enters into a contract with the operator, and therefore withdrawal of that operator's permit will affect the board and the entity, and therefore the licensee. So I would recommend that the licensee and the board, or as we are going to change the entity, also be consulted before the withdrawal of the permit. And I just want to make sure. And again, we have the representation issue. So it's the same argument. I won't remake it. It's just the unease in 36.2, paragraph B, where we talk about representations. So my concern there is must be broader, and then on representations, we rather be put a little bit softer.
Okay. We'll got that there.
Members?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We then move to, it's the, we've got the DTI coming in at any point here. 38 again.
But I think you're coming in to call that on.
Yes, the 7 advocates.
On 37, it is the same issue of consultation. What we have is an operator's permit is now being transferred to another entity. And again, my argument is just that it is your entity, your SEZ entity, that has a contract with this operator. And although we here have it's a different situation from the other side, it's the operator that is requesting the transfer. What I'm proposing is that we add another requirement, that it is necessary for the special economic zone entity or the board of that entity to support that application for transfer, because it's the contract that's now being amended.
Right. Okay, and we then move, I think, to yourself, DTI, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We move to page 17, section 38, under application to locate in special council. There, we are proposing removal or deletion of the late minister, that is subsection 1, and replace it with special economic zone board. So the sentence will read, any person who intends to conduct a business in a special economic zone must apply to the special economic zone board in the manner and form prescribed to locate the business in the special economic zone. And section 38, subsection 3, or section 38, subsection 2C, I think there, instead of reading as criterion, we should read the criteria. Comply with any other criteria that the minister may prescribe. And then section 38, subsection 3, we are actually deleting the word minister and replacing it with a special economic zone board. In other words, we are proposing that the investors, the location of investors or businesses to the special economic zone must be approved by that board of directors or the SEZLF. Based on the criteria that will be provided. So the sentence will read, Special Economic Zone Board may, after considering the recommendations of the operator, approve the application of a business to locate within that Special Economic Zone with conditions. Then, Chapter 7, if I may, Honorable Chairperson, under transitional provisions, Section 39, Subsection 3. There we are proposing an amendment. In fact, if I may read it in the context, any IDZ operator permit issued under the IDZ regulations, which is in force immediately before this act comes into operation, remains in force and must be regarded as a special economic zone operator permit issued under this act. And subsection 4, which is an addition. Any IDZ enterprise approved to be located in an IDZ under the IDZ regulations before this act comes into operation must be regarded as a business approved to be located in a special economic zone in terms of this act, provided that such a business complies with the criteria in section 23, subsection 5, and section 37, subsection 3. Subsection 5, notwithstanding subsections 2, 3, and 4, any IDZ operator must ensure that the IDZ complies with the framework regulating special economic zones in terms of this Act within 3 years of commencement of this Act. So as I've indicated in the presentation, that will also lead to the lines of accountability and responsibility, where you have the separation between the operator, the entity, and the licensee, as in terms of this bill. And then the last part, section 40, is just inclusion. Section 40, subsection 1, is just inclusion of the word advisor. And next, section 41, subsection 1, also inclusion of the word advisor. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DTI. We turn again to Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. In fact, my last comment deals with Clause 39 and the fact that there must be a period for incorporation of the provisions of the bill. But I see now that that is in fact done in sub 5. So that comment of mine has been effected. We can delete that from my document.
It's already taken and accounts for in. Right now, members, we've just got 1 o'clock as well, so that's been, well timed. And just to indicate where we are for tomorrow, because we are, you know, moving towards the finalisation, you see. And there's a need for us to make sure that everyone is aware of what we do need. Certainly we'll be going through this clause by clause, but we're also, as I say, wanting to assure, there's been references to Treasury and Finance and the Minister of Finance along the way on certain issues, and we also want to ensure that where we have said there will be this alignment with legislation, etc., that would include all of the PFMA per se. And we would ensure that that is the case. So we then, when we do have issues that may arise in that regard, it would be constructive if we were to flag that and to look at those particular issues for all of us. So we're going to be now, it's going to be a very serious day tomorrow as we go clause by clause on the issues themselves. And I would hope that again, the team will liaise with each other in this regard as we come towards the final phase here. The meeting will be held in this room, V119, and it will be at our past at 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Are we all online with that one? Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.
Yes. Oh, I see.